The Rams are back where they belong, where it all began in 1946. The last 20 years have been a bad dream. Now, it's time for the Ramble On Podcast. Here are your hosts, Steve Mason and Ryan Abraham.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Ramble On Podcast for Wednesday, April the 13th. I'm Steve Mason from the Mason and Ireland Show. Afternoons, noon to 3 on ESPN LA 710. And Ryan Abraham is here, USCFootball.com and LARamsReport.com. And we are joined today by ESPN Sports Nation Rams reporter and insider, Nick Wagner. Nick, what's going on, man?
Not much. How are you guys?
Everything is good. Everything is good. We're geared up for the NFL draft now, which is just a couple of weeks away. What are we, 2 weeks or so away? I wanted to start, though, by asking you about Trey Mason. And he failed to appear today in Broward County Court. He was arrested in a terrible incident down in Hollywood, Florida, a couple of weeks ago. He was tased. He's been a kind of a key backup running back for the Rams. Any sense that this is that there's a chance he's going to stay with the organization?
Well, that's a good question at this point. And, you know, the last time I spoke to Jeff Fisher on the record was down in Florida at the owners meetings at Boca Raton last month at the end of March there. And we talked to him about that, and he kind of said they're still gathering information, still trying to kind of find out all the details. But certainly this isn't something that's going to help his cause, the fact that there's a warrant out for his arrest and that he apparently missed his arraignment on Monday. And so this is a guy who I think fell out of favor a little bit last year with the team. I thought that was kind of clear as the season went on, certainly when he was deactivated for the game against Baltimore after he missed a flight he missed the bus to the flight from St. Louis to Baltimore and was deactivated in that game and then didn't play all that well, quite frankly. When he got opportunities, his yards per carry was down, I think it was under 3, something like 2.8 yards per carry, and he had some issues with fumbles as well. So he needed a big offseason. He needed a good offseason, and certainly before they've even begun, their offseason training program hasn't done much to help himself. So I'm not sure if there's much of a market for him, if the Rams are interested in trading him. But I certainly think that his position on the team is a bit precarious at this point.
Hey, Nick, thanks again for coming on the podcast. Just want to check in and see the draft is coming up real quick here. Get your thoughts on what the Rams need to do here in the NFL draft.
Yeah, you know, they're in kind of a tough spot, I think. And I say that in the sense that the thing that everyone was hoping that they would do, the thing that they needed to do the most this offseason, was bolster their offense. You know, they finished near the bottom of the league in a lot of major categories last year, certainly scoring-wise, right towards the bottom of the NFL. And so they need to find a way to get better there. Well, through free agency, they haven't really done that. The only thing they've done is bring back a few guys like Brian Quick, Tim Barnes, the starter at center, and of course, putting a first-round tender on Case Keenum. And then if you look to the draft and say, okay, well, you know, maybe that's where they're going to make their hay. That's where they're going to find a way to make the offense better. That's fine because they have 3 picks in the first 45. But you look at this draft and you talk to analysts and the experts and the scouts and the people who look at all these college guys. And the one thing they keep saying is it's just not a great draft for offensive skill position guys. You know, it's a solid draft in offensive line, but not real deep and not real loaded in terms of wide receivers, certainly not at quarterback. And, you know, those guys, a lot of those quarterbacks, even the top 2 guys, Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, a lot of people don't think that they're ready to come in and play right away. And if you're the Rams, I think that's what you need. You know, certainly you don't want to go into the draft and say, well, we have to get somebody who can help us this year. You know, you plan long term. You want somebody who's going to help you for 5 years. But nonetheless, they are in a position with Jeff Fisher and Les Snead in year 5, where they need somebody, especially on offense, who can come in and make a difference right away. So it's really kind of hard to get a read on at this point. I don't necessarily think that they're going to be one of those teams that tries to move up for a Goff or a Wentz, but I certainly think they're doing all their diligence that they can on the top quarterbacks and the top wide receivers to see if there's a potential kind of meeting between need and value at number 15.
So if they do not trade up for Goff or Wentz, and a lot of people think they would have to get all the way up to number 6, Baltimore's pick in order to have a chance at Goff. I think people have conceded that Wentz is going to go, it's going to be Brown, the Browns' choice. At 15, they've got the opportunity to take Paxton Lynch, who's the quarterback out of Memphis. Do you have a read from the organization, from Les or from Jeff Fisher, on how they feel about Paxton Lynch, who will almost certainly be available to them at 15?
Yeah, I get the impression that they like him. They've spent their time kind of going back on him and doing plenty of work. I know they met with him at the combine. So there's certainly some interest there. And I think that's one of those things. He's kind of the ultimate example of that guy who probably isn't worthy of the number 15 pick or even going in the teens in this draft. But because he's a quarterback, he gets pushed up a little bit. You know, I think you feel maybe a little bit more comfortable with him at the bottom of the first round. And maybe that's the kind of guy who, you know, you would either trade up from the second round to get there because you get that fifth-year option if you take the guy in the first round, or maybe you even move back and you feel a little bit better about it if you're at, say, I don't know, 22, 23, somewhere in there. So I think they do have some interest there. I also think that they're looking at a variety of things. You know, even this draft is very deep in terms of defensive linemen. You know, the Rams have done a lot of things with their defensive line this offseason, you know, like keeping William Hayes, keeping Eugene Sims, bringing in Quentin Copels. But, you know, you talk to different people in the business and they think this is one of the best drafts ever for defensive linemen. And so maybe you do a little bit of pre-planning that way for the future with guys like Hayes and Sims and those guys getting up there in their careers. So there's a lot of different ways that they can go, but I think Lynch is certainly going to be a guy that's at least in the conversation moving forward. It's just going to have to be a situation where they feel comfortable with the reality that even if they take him at 15, he may not start, and then they've got a first-round pick who probably wouldn't play or start in his first season.
Nick, this is a really interesting time of the year just because there's no games being played, and people's draft stocks seem to go up and down. Even people talk about Wentz maybe not, you know, maybe falling a little bit. He, you know, they didn't throw the ball all that much when he was in college, being a smaller school and stuff. Do you kind of think there's going to be some crazy shakeup with the quarterback situation in the first, you know, first half of this this draft coming up?
I think it's a great point, and I think there is a real possibility that there's going to be somebody who's willing to make a bold move to get the guy that they want. Just because of the fact that, you know, the contracts for rookies aren't as huge as they used to be, it's a little bit easier pill to swallow if you make a move up and you don't, and the guy doesn't work out, than it was a few years ago when you had guys like Sam Bradford who were being guaranteed over $50 million before they've ever taken a snap in the NFL. And so I think when you look at this draft, that I think the Titans certainly would love to get out of that first spot, assuming that they can get good value there. I think as much as they might like a Laremy Tunsil or a Jalen Ramsey, they don't necessarily want to use the number one pick on that guy. And so I think we could see a shakeup, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was something in that top five. It may not be Tennessee. Maybe it's Dallas doing something, or maybe a Philly perhaps is trying to jump over San Francisco to get a quarterback. So I could see that. I certainly could see that. And a lot of it is just the security that you talk about these general managers. And you know, I mentioned earlier, Jeff Fisher kind of being in year five here and needing to make something happen. But if you look at some of these other GMs who maybe have a little bit more settled situation where they know that they're going to be around for a little bit and they don't necessarily have to get immediate dividends from one of those quarterbacks, maybe they're more likely to go ahead and do something like that. And I also think the price isn't as high as it used to be. I don't think you're going to see an RG3 type of trade anymore. So I think it's a little bit more doable from that perspective as well.
You know, in looking at the draft, the one area where I think the Rams really need to address, and they haven't done it during free agency, is at the wide receiver position. They really have no explosive plays. Tavon Austin is a nifty little player, but they don't have an explosive stretch the field kind of wide receiver. And everybody agrees, and I looked at a bunch of highlights, that Laquon Treadwell, the wide receiver from Ole Miss, who has just got tremendous speed and the ability to catch the ball in a lot of traffic, that he would be the top wide receiver taken. How much interest do you think the Rams would have in him at number 15?
I think there's interest there. I think that they're looking at a number of those top receivers as guys who could potentially fit that bill. And the one thing with Treadwell, I think, that would really appeal to the Rams, and kind of my read on the situation is he's one of the best run blocking wide receivers that has come out in a long time. And I know that sounds silly because, like you point out and accurately point out, they need big playmakers out on the outside at wide receiver. But if he could add that element because of what they want to be offensively, a Todd Gurley centric offense, there's certainly value in having a wide receiver out there who can help open up some holes that way. And that's something that an area that Treadwell excels. But I also think that, you know, if you look at some of his numbers, there's some things that are a little bit alarming. I think his yards per catch for a guy who's supposedly a bit of a deep threat and, you know, doesn't have the greatest speed in the world, ran in the 4.6s in the 40-yard dash. And certainly that's not slow, but it's not fast compared to some of these other guys. And the Rams have valued speed in the past. I think you look at a Corey Coleman from Baylor, Michael Thomas, Ohio State, Josh Dotson, who's my personal favorite amongst the receivers. I think he's the best one that's coming out and certainly the one who would be the most ready to contribute right away. So I think there's a few guys there that are, and they're all kind of probably right in that range, that 15 to 20 range. But the other thing here is, you know, you're talking about Laquon Treadwell as the first receiver in this draft. If he was really a truly dominant number one type of receiver that could come in, the reality is he wouldn't be there at number 15. And so I think that's something you have to examine and say, well, you know, why are these other teams passing on him if he's really that type of a guy? So I do think that's his range. I do think they're interested, but I also think they're looking at a number of those receivers. And again, with those 2 second-round picks, maybe there's a little bit better match in terms of the value.
Nick, is there a chance for some sort of trade on draft day for a receiver? I know you guys had a piece about Floyd from Arizona that could be a possibility going to the Rams. What do you think about a trade for a wide receiver there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that was Mike Sando just kind of throwing out some things that he thinks would make sense, not necessarily that those would be things that would happen. It's certainly within the division. I'm not sure the Cardinals would be willing to do that. But I think it's interesting, and I think it's something that the Rams would definitely have to take a look at depending on who would be available when you look at those receivers. Part of the reason Mike mentioned Michael Floyd was he's going into the last year of his contract, and you know, if you want to use that fifth-year option on a wide receiver, this is the same thing that the problem that the Rams are going to face here is the transition tag if they're a top-10 player. You know, Tavon Austin, if they decide to exercise that fifth-year option for him, it would cost over $12 million, and that's a lot of money to pay for a guy who hasn't necessarily produced at that level. And Michael Floyd, you know, if you're looking to go get a guy like that, you give up a pick for what could be a 1-year rental. And so there's risk involved in that regard too. But I do think a guy like that, I mean, not necessarily him per se, again, maybe somebody outside the division, but if there was a team that had a veteran receiver that they're willing to make available who could come in and contribute right away, I think it would make all the sense in the world for the Rams, because like we mentioned right here at the top of this show, is this draft is just not loaded with kind of instant impact guys at the positions where the Rams need them most.
All right, let me ask you about Christian Hackenberg, who's the quarterback from Penn State. I think it was whose mock draft are we looking at? Todd McShay. Mock drafts, by the way, are, you know, you can crumble them up and throw them away because it changes once the draft happens. But he theorized that the Rams may look at the Penn State quarterback Christian Hackenberg as a second-round pick. You know, a lot of teams are kind of mixed on Hackenberg as a guy that you could develop, like a guy like Bill O'Brien, who coached him at Penn State and is now at Houston. You know, there's some speculation that he may draft Hackenberg. Do you think the Rams have interest in more of a developmental quarterback like Hackenberg in the second round, or do they feel like they have their developmental quarterback already in Sean Mannion?
Yeah, it's a great question and a great point, because I feel like Sean Mannion is the guy that gets forgotten about here when we talk about the Rams quarterback position. And when they drafted Mannion, they knew, even though he came from a pro-style offense at Oregon State, they knew it was probably going to take him a little bit of time before he was going to be ready. I think they're hopeful that this year he can push for that number two job. I don't think they believe he's quite ready to start yet, but if he could push for that number two job, they would at least start getting him more reps in practice, which could eventually yield more opportunities to potentially push for the starting job down the line. And they do like Sean Mannion. They do believe in him. I don't think they're ready to give up on him at this point. And like we talked about way back when I came on this podcast, however long ago that was, that Nick Foles was the most likely quarterback to be deleted if they were going to make a move, which would inherently bump Mannion up on the depth chart. So I do think your point is valid, and I think that they're in a situation where if you're going to develop Mannion and you're going to draft a quarterback in this draft, I think the reality is that no matter who the quarterback is in this draft, you're probably going to have to develop them at some point. That doesn't mean they should stop looking. You never know what you might stumble into. But a guy like Hackenberg, to me, based on what I've seen, I think he'd be a little bit further off than even Mannion would. And then at that point, I'm not really sure what the point of taking him would be. So they've done their diligence on him as well, and that's really the answer on all these quarterbacks. I know they've met with and talked to a good portion of them at the combine at the very minimum. So I don't think that I would rule it out, but I also would say that he seems like a guy who would be at least a few years off. And now, again, you've used the second round pick who could potentially help you if you went a different direction, could help you this year and maybe even next year, because you don't know how long it would take a guy like Hackenberg to be ready.
Nick, I love the mock drafts. They're pretty fun. I love when they project trades too. That's always good. Like, oh yeah, project a trade.
Yeah, and by the way, it's always so much fun to watch. Mel Kiper just repeatedly be wrong during a mock draft. That's during the actual draft. Like everything he said, forget it. It's going to do something different entirely. Because I think any general manager whose lips are moving right now in the NFL, they are lying for the most part. They're not going to tell you what they're really going to do.
Yeah, and
no, they definitely don't. And that's the thing. If you're doing a mock draft, you better just go into it knowing that there's a chance that you're going to be wrong on about, I don't know, roughly 90% of what you put on that piece of paper. So,
most of the drafts, if you look right now, and McShay, I think, is one of them where they have the Rams. It's very offensive heavy, you know, just loaded on the offensive side of the football. But you know, Jeff Fisher. There's so much love with the defensive side. I mean, it's hard to picture them not using at least one, and who knows, maybe two of those first three picks in the first 45 on defensive players. I mean, do you think they're going to be able to stick and pick offensive guys, or there's going to be guys in that room, well, the war room, say, no, we got to get a defensive guy or two?
I think you're on it, and I think it would be silly. A lot of people from the outside look at it and say, well, these are what their needs are. This is what they need to do. And teams are lying when they say that they're only drafting best player available regardless of position. But they're also lying when they say they don't draft for need. In an ideal world, you want to marry those two things. You want your needs to be your value. You want to draft the best player available at a position of need. And I think the Rams are in a position this year where it's going to be really hard to kind of find that marriage, to find that intersection that they need to happen. Now, I think if you look at defensively, and this is a good draft, like I mentioned earlier, for defensive linemen, they certainly, especially under Jeff Fisher and Les Snead, have not been afraid to take defensive linemen early in the draft. We saw with Michael Brockers, saw with Aaron Donald. You go up and down the list, they have not shied away from going that direction. And so I wouldn't be shocked if they did that. And I think cornerback, I really think that's a position that maybe isn't getting as much attention, but something that I think the Rams have a lot of interest in. I know they've had a number of pre-draft visitors who've come out to L.A. who are cornerbacks, guys like Mackenzie Alexander from Clemson and a few others who they're looking at because they lost Janoris Jenkins. And that could be a situation where the value meets up to the positional need a little bit better. And they certainly have an opening at free safety as well. So no, I wouldn't be surprised if one or even two of those first three picks are guys who are defensive guys, and they're planning not only for the immediate, but also for the long-term as well.
Hey, I want to ask you about something. The Rams brought back Mark Barron, who was a free agent. They re-signed him. And he fits into this sort of different role that NFL teams are playing with now, sort of the safety-turned linebacker. It's sort of like this in-between position. And a bunch of teams are now looking at this, that, you know, he's a safety, but he also is able to slide in at linebacker. Sort of describe the way Jeff Fisher uses him and Greg Williams uses him in that Rams defense.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you go back and kind of trace what's become of him since he arrived in with the Rams, you know, when they first traded for him, he was a strong safety basically. And then people kind of looked at it and said, well, why are they getting a strong safety? They already have TJ McDonald. And Greg Williams obviously had a plan for him and started to implement it. And the way they were doing it is kind of sprinkling him into big sub packages. And by big sub packages, I mean, You know, a lot of times when you go to nickel, you're bringing an extra cornerback onto the field to replace a linebacker. And in this scenario, it would be you take the linebacker off, and instead of bringing in another corner, you bring in Mark Barron. And the same way with a dime situation where, you know, maybe you'd bring off two linebackers and you'd have two corners come in. Instead, you have one corner come in, you have Mark Barron come in. So that was kind of the genesis of it. That's where it started. You know, big nickel, big dime. Mark Barron would come in, basically just act as he was another linebacker, essentially, in where he lined up, but he was able to do a lot of different things. So Greg Williams was able to blitz him. He was able to use him in coverage on tight ends, able to have him chase running backs out of the backfield, all those types of things. And then this year, what happened was it kind of just evolved on its own based on things that were out of the Rams' control, namely the injury that Alec Ogletree, the fibula injury that he suffered in week four against Arizona, put him out for the year, essentially. And they needed a weak side linebacker. And so Barron moved into that position, and the Rams never technically called him a weak side linebacker. I think they actually listed him on their depth chart as a weak side safety, which I didn't see on anybody else's depth chart. But nonetheless, he was basically playing a weak side linebacker position, certainly played pretty well there. And the Rams felt comfortable enough with him at that position that they wanted to pay him a big chunk of money, as you saw in free agency, and move Alec Ogletree into the middle and displace James Laurinaitis, who they let go of. So that's kind of been the evolution of it. The way you'll see him used now is a little bit more of a traditional weak side linebacker, but Greg Williams is not afraid to mix things up and certainly will continue to use him in different ways, and whether it's different blitz packages, which he unveiled a lot more of those last year than he did when Barron first arrived, as well as using him in coverage.
Hey, Nick, if you look back, if you've been covering this team for a while, you look back over the last several years of the Rams in the NFL draft, and there's a lot of guys on the roster still. It seems like they did a pretty good job of picking out players and stuff. You know, they definitely won the RG3 trade, and I know you guys had a piece on that too, but just kind of give your assessment of how the Rams have done, I guess, outside of the quarterback position over the last several years in the draft.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I've been going through them this week with different pieces, just kind of the four draft classes under Jeff Fisher and Les Snead. And I did write earlier this week about how, the quarterback was kind of the one spot that was ignored and certainly has been a big thing that's held them back. But if you look at them year to year, there's been a couple of themes that I think have kind of evolved here and have become prevalent when you look at them. One of them is, they have never been afraid to draft guys with upside. A lot of measurable guys who aren't necessarily, but haven't been super productive in college, and you're kind of projecting what they've become at the NFL level. It's worked out for them in some cases. I look at Michael Brockers, 2012 first round pick, who's turned into a pretty good player and was more of one of those types of projection guys, an upside guy. And then it hasn't worked out in other cases. A guy like Brian Quick, who, you know, they used the first pick of the second round in 2012 on. Some of that's been injury related. A lot of it, though, is he just hasn't been able to kind of adjust to running routes at the NFL level. And, you know, he had a great workout at Appalachian State and had all the measurables and all those things. But there was a reason that he was, you know, not a first round pick and that he was playing at Appalachian State. And so hasn't quite worked out. Obviously, he's getting another chance with them this year. So that's one of the things that I think you always can keep an eye on is a lot of times if it comes down to kind of the guy who's proven and maybe a little bit more polished, has a higher floor but a lower ceiling, they pass on those guys for maybe the higher ceiling and the lower floor. So you've seen some of that. And then they've also done a pretty good job of kind of sticking to their board and taking the guys who just stand out as great players. Aaron Donald is a prime example of that. Todd Gurley, I mean, you can make the argument that those are the two best players on the team right now. And both of those guys weren't necessarily positions of need when the Rams drafted them, but they were clearly the best guys still on the board, and they were able to come in and make a difference right away. And I think that still is the ultimate thing for this team is just needing more of those blue chip kind of guys, the guys like the Donalds and the Gurleys. Ideally, you could get that guy who also happens to play quarterback, but that doesn't seem to be an option right now. So, but those are just a few of the things that when I look at the way they draft and kind of try to identify trends and the way they might go in this coming draft, a few of the things that I take into consideration.
You know, we talked about Trey Mason and his problems. There's another more positive story. Stedman Bailey, who's been a receiver for the Rams and is still on the roster, was shot in the head twice
back in November. He is now, he's tweeted out and Instagrammed himself running drills. What do you know about that story? And what are the chances that he is on the roster when the season starts in September?
Boy, it's tough to make a prediction on that. And the reason I say that is, you know, you see the progress that he's making. You think, you know, maybe there's a chance. And certainly it's amazing. Like you said, the fact that, you know, he was really literally inches from dying from being shot in the head. And he's talked about it. Jeff Fisher's talked about it, that it was, you know, if some of those one of those gunshots had been an inch or two to a different direction, then that he might not have lived. And here we are, you know, about 6 months later, and he's running routes, he's working out, he's doing all those different things. But Jeff Fisher has said repeatedly that the thing is, can they get a doctor to clear him? What is a doctor going to say about a guy who had suffered such head trauma going back and playing a sport where obviously head trauma is a big part of what happens on a weekly basis? And so I think that's still kind of what they're waiting for, to wait and see. I don't think they're in any sort of a huge rush to get an answer on that. Obviously, he's making progress. Yeah, and I know he attended the team meeting that they had out there in Manhattan Beach in early March. And I think that he's planning on at least being around the team, around the facility when they open the off-season program on April 18th. But in terms of being cleared to play, that's something that only a doctor would know the answer to. And I'm not even sure we've reached a point yet with him where he can go and go through the battery of tests where they would be able to give a definitive answer on that.
Well, it is good to see him up and running and at least working at it. I mean, it's amazing that he is where he is, given the fact that he was, shot in the head twice, really just a few months ago.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a miracle. And you know, I don't want to get too macabre here, but you think about what happened in New Orleans the other night, and Will Smith and that unfortunate incident, and he wasn't so lucky to get away. But that's how close it was for Stedman Bailey, and so some good news, at least in light of all the bad things that happened in New Orleans. At least Stedman Bailey is making progress, and if nothing else, guys, even if he doesn't get to play football again, certainly looks like he's going to be able to lead a productive and healthy life moving forward.
Hey Nick, just last thing for me. We talked to you a while ago. I think it was our second episode of the Ramble On podcast. A lot has changed since then with, you know, the team moving out, and there's just been so much kind of going on. I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, with the facilities and all the, you know, the temporary stuff, everything that's been announced and the moving out to LA. Has everything kind of gone the way you thought it was going to be? It's been a lot of changes, and there's still going to be obviously a lot more changes over the next several months.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I we talked about the, even way back then, I know we talked about the locations for everything, and it played out pretty much how we discussed it. And so no real surprises there. You know, there was just so many pieces to the move, and I think the Rams are happy to at least have one of those moves over with. The crazy thing is if you look at this, there's still going to be a lot more moving to do. You know, even I know they're going to do their draft deal down at LA Live, and you know, that's another, at least kind of relocating the war room, or the draft room, I should say, to down there from Oxnard is a little bit of a haul, and having to move some things around there. And then of course you're going to have to move after the off season program down to Irvine for training camp. And then you'll be moving after that back up north to Thousand Oaks. So there's so many things that they still have to do. And I know that they've got a big warehouse full of stuff that goes to different places, that they're keeping a lot of their stuff in a warehouse in Anaheim right now before they move to different places. But, I think it's gone the way that they thought it was going to go. I don't think any of them would tell you it's been easy. I don't think any of them would tell you that it hasn't been a distraction or at least a little bit of a headache. But I think it's at least gone as smooth as it could possibly, as something so big, a move so big could possibly go.
All right. Hey, final thing for me, Nick. I am personally really excited. Somewhere along the lines on Twitter, I had started a hashtag Rams. I wanted them to be the team that was involved in Hard Knocks. So it was hashtag Rams Hard Knocks. Now, I have no idea if my little campaign had any effect on things, but the Rams are, in fact, the team that's going to be on Hard Knocks this year. My understanding is that there have been previous seasons where the Rams were considered, and they really didn't want to be a part of it. Talk about the process of that. First of all, is that true? And then talk about the process of,
of how they got the Rams to do it, or were the Rams seeking it? Just tell us about that whole Hard Knocks thing.
Well, first of all, Roger Goodell told me in Boca Raton that it was your hashtag that was the deciding factor. So I think.
See, I know. I know wow. Goodell listens to me. I know he follows me on Twitter. He has often said I'm a great follow.
Yeah, he said you're a wise man, and the guy gets ratings. He understands what ratings are all about. So that was the reason. No, you know, in all sincerity, yeah, I do think that they had tried to avoid it in recent years, that Jeff Fisher had kind of been against it in terms of some of the things that they were doing, not wanting cameras around. And you can go back. I know there was a kerfuffle over Michael Sam that was made after that, people claiming that there was kind of a quid pro quo in drafting Michael Sam, that the Rams wouldn't do Hard Knocks. But even if you don't know that, or you don't know what to believe in that story, if you remember that year when Michael Sam came in, the Oprah Winfrey Network had planned to do a documentary type of thing where they followed Michael Sam around in his efforts to make the team, and the Rams put the kibosh on that. So I think that kind of gives you an idea, at least, that the Rams didn't want cameras around. They didn't want to have to worry about the potential distractions of those things. Now that they're moving, I think that it's changed a little bit. I think there's an understanding that, you know, going to LA, they need to find a way to make a splash. I think they figure out, you know, there's a chance that if they're on HBO, that people are going to get to know them a little bit better, maybe a little bit quicker than they would just by watching the team play, and that they have some characters certainly that will appeal to people and that people will be interested in as well. So I don't know. I don't know that Jeff Fisher is maybe as excited as he's led on when he's talked about it. But I think they at least came to grips with the fact that this isn't a bad idea to do it now. And it's also a way to document a little bit of piece of history with the team coming back after a couple of decades.
All right. Well, listen, Nick Wagner, always great talking to you. And we're excited, man. Season tickets go on sale here pretty quick. And we're getting ready for OTAs and, of course, the NFL draft. And looking forward. We've not even actually met in person, have we?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, just via phone here.
But I'll be at the draft event downstairs here at LA Live, and I think you're going to be here too, right?
That's the plan. Yeah, looking forward to meeting you guys.
All right, cool. Your Twitter handle, Nick, is
N Wagner with the O.
N Wagner with an O. Ryan, you are
at Inside Troy.
At Inside Troy, and for the moment at least, I am at Steve Mason ESPN. At Steve Mason ESPN. Ramble On podcast. We'll be back next week. Great stuff from Nick. I know Ryan excited about the NFL draft.
Completely. Looking forward to that. And thanks again, Nick, and everyone else. Thanks for tuning in to the Ramble On podcast. We'll talk to you next time.